The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host here, Nathan Gladwell and Gray Oldenburg. We're going to dive into some Auburn football, Alabama basketball, then go into the NFL draft that happened this past week. So starting off, Gray, Auburn football here. Landed a big-time transfer in Penn State wide receiver Keandre Lambert-Smith, transferring to Auburn to pair him alongside Cam Coleman, Perry Thompson, and the stud receiver group Auburn has now, as crazy as it is to say. I can't remember a wide receiver group at the Plains being this stacked before.
No, yeah. This will be the best wide receiver group Auburn's seen since, I believe, I want to say 2014 with Sammy Coates and Ricardo Lewis and those guys. You know, you could argue Seth Williams and Anthony Schwartz and that group there, but I don't think they match the type of high-end talent that you've got on this year's team. And I think the biggest thing about this, Lambert Smith is going to be a stud wide receiver. I think he's going to play outside a lot alongside guys like Cam Coleman and Camden Brown and Perry Thompson and those guys, instead of playing in the slot. Saw him in the slot a lot at Penn State. I think he'll steer away from that at Auburn. But I think the absolute biggest thing, and not only just landing Keandre Lambert-Smith, who's one of the top wide receiver in the transfer portal, but also Robert Lewis in the winter window from Georgia State, who had such an unbelievable year, getting these experienced guys in, because, you know, Alex, you talked about guys like Cam Coleman and Perry Thompson. Auburn fans need to understand those guys are coming in as true freshmen. You know, yes, they're talented. Yes, they're going to be two of the most talented receivers that have ever walked on campus at Auburn University, but expectations need to be handled because they're freshmen, and getting experienced guys like Lambert Smith, getting a guy like Camden Brown back, getting a guy like Robert Lewis from Georgia State, I think that's huge to help out these young guys and fill out that wide receiver room.
Nathan, is this receiver room at Auburn better than Alabama's currently?
Better than Alabama's? I don't know, because they're both like very talented and very young. Auburn has a lot of more veteran pieces at this point in time. So I guess you can say Auburn's just better off that. But we really won't know until we actually get into the season. But the main concern hasn't been the wide receiver room. I mean, they didn't really need to add Lambert Smith. I mean, it was just another thing stacked on the pile. But the main concern, the elephant in the room, has always been Peyton Thorne at the quarterback position. Can he get the job done? Last year, we saw how much he struggled. Turnovers being a big thing, and just missing easy throws. And even going back to his time at Michigan State, where he came short a lot of the time. It's going to fall back on him, because Auburn has not attacked the transfer portal for quarterback. Hugh Freeze likes what he has in Peyton Thorne. And I think he is a capable person. He has shown times where he can be that guy, but he just hasn't proved it yet. So this is the huge step he needs to make this upcoming season, to go ahead and use his talent he has around him to benefit his situation. And Hugh Freeze has done all he can for him. So if he cannot do it with this wide receiver room, he's not doing it.
Yeah.
As much as we clowned Peyton Thorne last season, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. He was a later transfer coming into Auburn. He didn't have a lot of weapons at the receiver position. First year under Hugh Freeze, it was like a rotation of who was calling plays. Was it him or Philip Montgomery? And now he's got a year under his belt. He's got the full offseason with Hugh Freeze. Has a plethora of weapons at the running back position, the receiver position. Freeze is calling the plays. He's got an offensive line that's one of the best, if not the best, in the SEC. So like you said, Nathan, if Peyton Thorne can get it done this season, what can Auburn do? I think they got guys behind him that are good, like Walker White, other guys like that. So I think Peyton Thorne has the stuff to be successful at Auburn. It's just, can he put it all together and show what he did in the spring game? Can he show it in the regular season against these tougher opponents?
Yeah, no more excuses for Peyton Thorne anymore. And Alex nailed it right on the head. What else could he possibly need? You know, you mentioned the studs at the running back position. He brought the whole running back room back. Now you bring these studs in the wide receiver room. You get Rivaldo Fairweather back as well. You get all your offensive linemen back, plus a true left tackle transfer from Mississippi State, Percy Lewis, who's going to be your starting left tackle. And you add Derek Nix, who at Ole Miss was the play caller. Everybody wants to say Lane Kiffin is the leader of that offense at Ole Miss. The guy behind that whole offense was Derek Nix at Ole Miss. Now he's, alongside Hugh Freeze at Auburn, where he was, where Hugh Freeze is comfortable calling play. No more excuses for Peyton Thorne. This is the season where he needs to have the season that he had back when he had Kenneth Walker and Keon Coleman and Jared Reed and those guys at Michigan State.
Oh, Kenneth Walker.
Gray's favorite. All right, let's move on to some Alabama basketball here. Nathan, the elephant in the room, Grant Nelson announces he's coming back 2 days on Monday. We're recording the video. What are your thoughts on Grant Nelson coming back and his impact on the Crimson Tide?
It's unbelievably huge. You talk about the amount of impact he had in the Final Four, and then going back into the whole run. There were times last season where he just didn't have a role on the team. It felt like he didn't fit in. It felt like he was trying to find himself, and he finally did at the end of the season. And now I'm excited to see him step back into this offense where he's probably going to end up feeling comfortable. He's going to know what he's supposed to do. And I think a lot of the problems initiated with him not being a efficient shooter last year, and those are shots he normally hit. So if he can go into this next year and he can shoot the ball a little bit better, I mean, what we're looking at is a potential first round pick in the NBA draft because of his size, because of his ability to stretch the floor, and it is such a big need on so many NBA teams. So it's unbelievably huge. I can't put it into words how much it means to the team to have such veteran leadership from by like Grant Nelson.
Gray, any thoughts on Grant Nelson coming back?
Yeah, Nathan mentioned, I think the biggest thing is depth. First of all, Alabama's could legit go 12 deep next year as of this moment. And Nate Oates has not had that yet. I think Nate Oates is about ready to have. I know talent wise, I probably would have said the Brandon Miller, Noah Clowney team was better. But I think this will be Nate Oates' best team in Alabama this upcoming season, whether Mark Sears comes back or not, because of the depth that he'll have at every single position. I think getting Grant Nelson back is huge for the leadership aspect of that. This guy's a 5th-year senior. He's coming into a room at the forward, center room that is pretty inexperienced. Alabama has 3 freshmen coming in at the forward spot. I think Grant
Cheryl.
Nelson was is needed at that spot. If he can get back to having the confidence that he had in the West Regional, especially games like against North Carolina and against Clemson, that offense can run through him. When Alabama's not shooting well, oh, let's go to Grant in the post. Because that's what happened against North Carolina. North Carolina had some interesting matchups there, but Alabama took advantage of it because they had a size. And Nathan said, this guy could be a first round pick. Yes, if he's efficient as he can be, and as he's shown to be, and confident like he is, he very well could be with his size, his athleticism, and his pure intangibles. NBA teams are going to fall all over this kid all season.
Yeah, I think y'all hit the nail on the head with talking about his lack of confidence to start the season. When you come into a new team as a transfer, it's hard to have the confidence, especially when you have established guys like a Mark Sears and a Rylan Griffin being the ingrained quote unquote leaders of the team. And it kind of took a while for Grant Nelson to figure out what is my role on this team. I think coming in, a lot of fans were like, okay, we want Grant Nelson to play like he did all season, like he did against UNC in the tournament. That's what Grant Nelson needs to look like. And that really wasn't realistic for Grant Nelson, especially with Mark Sears having the season he had. I think going into next year, he'll be the experienced leader, whether Mark Sears comes back or not. They'll be the two main guys there. So him taking on that leadership role and being more of a focal point of the offense and being more aggressive, kind of like we saw towards the end of that North Carolina game where it was just, okay, get the ball to Grant, everybody move out of the way and let him go. And if Grant Nelson can play like that or just be a somewhat sort of rim protector like he was in the tournament, I think he'll do great things at Alabama. And like y'all both said, I would not be surprised if we're sitting here next year in the next NBA draft and we're saying, hey, Grant Nelson's a first round pick. I think he has a lot of things you look at in a guy like Chet Holmgren, the rim protection, the shooting, the ability to create your own shot. He's not, I don't think he's as polished as Chet Holmgren, but I think
No,
he,
definitely
if looking
not.
for a comparison in the NBA right now, I think it is Chet.
Yeah.
Some transfers out. You had Davin Cosby Jr. transfer to Wake Forest, Nick Pringle, South Carolina, and then Rylan Griffin, officially announcing his transfer to Kansas, even though many people were already saying that as soon as he hit the portal. Nathan, any words of wisdom to these guys as they transfer out to other colleges?
Look, Devin Cosby Jr. didn't have much of a role. And I think he looked at the roster next year and he knew he wasn't going to be playing time. So going to a school like Wake Forest that could use him a little bit more, I think he just wanted to play a little bit more minutes. And then Nick Pringle pretty much goes home to South Carolina. He's from Seaborn, so it wasn't a huge surprise, but I think him and Ada's probably sat down and had a talk about his role in the team. And you look at what Nick Pringle had. He's an undersized center who he's athletic, but he can't shoot, and he struggles on the defensive end. And it wasn't going to work out well, especially with the lineup we had coming in next year. He wouldn't have played much. And I hate it because I love Nick Pringle. I loved what he did, but I think South Carolina is probably going to be a better spot for him. And then Ryland Griffin going to Kansas. We already talked about this. We already went through this if like a month ago. We knew what was going to happen. We knew. I've said my piece with it.
Beat a
Good
dead
luck to
horse.
him. Good. Yeah. I'm not going to beat a dead horse here. Good luck to him. Whatever. Kansas has decided they want to go ahead and throw a team together through the transfer portal and then bring back Hunter Dickinson. I hope they're happy with that team.
Don't forget about DeJuan Harris Jr. He's really impactful, Nathan. Yeah, I think it's a good thing for Cosby and Nick Pringle to go back to their homes. Cosby played his high school ball in North Carolina, so to go home can't discredit those guys, especially like Nathan pointed out. They're probably going to have diminished roles next season. Cosby, considering what Alabama's done guard-wise in the portal, probably would not have even touched the floor. So him to go to Wake Forest, get some playing time, and Nick Pringle to go home to South Carolina and I guess be a starter there. I don't think he would have gone if he wouldn't have been. So kudos to those guys for going to the portal and finding good homes. Ryland Griffin, good luck to him. I hope he finds success at Kansas. Hopefully the grass is greener for him on the other side, even though most of the time it's not. But I don't know what Kansas is going to do with this portal class because you got Zeke Mayo coming in from South Dakota State, Riley Kugel from Florida, Storr from Wisconsin, Griffin now, and then you return Harris Jr. and Dickinson. That's six guys. I don't know who comes off the bench. I don't know what Bill Self promised these guys playing time wise. I don't know how they manage this. I know it's just six guys, and you're like, okay, we'll just take one off the bench. But
Who wants
these
to
are
play
big
this?
name
He wants to be the
transfers.
sixth man, though. Who wants to be the
Yeah.
sixth man?
I mean, Zeke Mayo from South Dakota State is not a slouch. I believe he averaged like 18 points a game. Kugel, he did good things at Florida. I know he came off the bench last year towards the end of the season. So maybe Kugel's a sixth man, but I'm not sure if you go from Florida to Kansas if you're going to want to take the same role. I don't know. I don't think Storr or Griffin come off the bench at all, considering they're both coming from higher profile programs. Moving on to the commitment Alabama got over the weekend, Nathan. Alabama ga basketball Gatorade Player of the Year in 2023 and four-star guard LeBaron Fialon committed to the Crimson Tide after getting his release from National Letter of Intent with Kansas. Well, what does getting Fialon mean to the program, Nathan, even though Oates went and got Ade Holloway a couple of weeks ago?
Even more depth, man. I mean, the guard position. If Mark Shears comes back, this will probably be the most talented team in the nation. And I mean, I didn't think we'd be saying this. I didn't think this is going to happen, especially with all the transfers we had coming out. But I got to give credit to Nate and what he's done through the transfer portal this offseason. And then his recruiting, it's just been top notch. And this is just like a cherry on top. I love what Phylon. I mean, you look at his build, he's a 6'3" guy. He can defend well, but his offensive output is also insane. Very athletic. I mean, there's not much more to say. I mean, he won the Alabama Basketball Gatorade Player of the Year in 2023. It's not an easy thing to do. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the table. And I think he'll fit right into the offense with the amount of threes he shoots. So I'm ready, but Mark Sears, please come back. This is what we're all banking on.
Any hard feelings with a Phylon Gray, considering he
Not at
was an
all.
Auburn commit at one time?
Not at all. Look, this kid's a baller. I think he is the biggest offseason get or addition that Nate Oates has had to this Alabama team. Because of what he means, not only for depth, just like Nathan mentioned. But also, this is not a 1 year kid. This is a multi year guy, and he's a true scorer. And that's what he does. That's what he did at Baker High School down in Mobile. That's what put him on the map at for the Gator Alabama player, Gatorade Player of the Year, whatever it was. No, I was super excited to watch him in an Auburn jersey, but then he left when Wes Flanagan left as his primary recruiter. And it heard a lot of things that he wants to play true point guard. It sounded like Flanagan and Bruce Pearl had plans for him to play the two guard, kind of play the Denver Jones, Bryce Brown role, and he wasn't fond of that. So I was very interested when he finally made that decision to go to Kansas instead of following Wes Flanagan to Ole Miss, or going to or committing to Alabama right after that, because I'd heard that Alabama was second in his recruiting at the time. But this is the biggest offseason get for Nate Oates. I think this guy has immediate impact, but also I think he's got the most long-term impact on the in the entire transfer portal class and recruiting class on this program in general.
Yeah, this commitment moves Alabama to number two in the recruiting class rankings, just behind Duke. So this is Nate Oates' best class so far at Alabama. What does this mean for Aide Holloway, though? Because you got Phelan coming in. He's going to be playing the guard position, probably the point guard position. Aide Holloway is also a point guard. So where does Holloway's role fall here, whether Mark Sears comes back or not?
I mean, I looked at this entire team, I looked at the roster, and like Gray said, Alabama's going to be what, 12 deep. It's a good problem to have, not having enough spaces on the floor to play everybody. But Natus isn't a guy who is scared to run different lineups. I mean, he just kind of throws people out there sometimes to see how they're going to mesh together, how they're going to work. I think a guy like Aiden Holloway definitely going to come off the bench. I don't see him starting if Mark Sears comes back. And Nader knows what he can do. He's going to develop him the best he can this offseason and try to turn him into a very efficient 3-point shooter. Probably not primary point guard. I would look for him at the 2-guard position, even though he is undersized for that. I think he's going to be better playing off the ball than he is off on the ball. So I think Nader's just going to look to incorporate him with someone who is a great ball handler, whether that be him playing alongside a guy like Mark Sears, or if Phylon turns out to be more of a dominant guard at the one, then Aiden can mesh with him. But it's going to be hard. I'm not going to lie to play every single person on the team. And I think the biggest worry is at the end of the season, whoever doesn't have the most playing time, they're going to be like, well, let me go ahead and transfer out. I can't develop here because I can't get the playing time. And this is just the age of college basketball we have. So Nader is just going to have to choose his cards and play them correctly if he wants everyone to stay and he wants his team to succeed.
I'll give you two answers to this question. I'm gonna give you like my real logical answer, and then I'm gonna give you my orange and blue glasses answer.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
My logical answer is just kind of like Nathan said, it's all about matchups. I think obviously having depth at the guard position, we've been saying all last few shows, the depth that Alabama has acquired this offseason, it is so important, and it's so important in a conference like the SEC, where you play two games a week. I mean, that is hard to do when you're playing the type of programs and the players that you're playing. And I think for Aiden, it's all going to be about matchups for him. I like the idea of having him at the two. Auburn, we really saw that. When Aiden was struggling to shoot the basketball during this past season, we saw Bruce Pearl switch him to the two, and he had more success off the ball when the pressure was off of him a little bit, and when Trey Donaldson was the primary ball handler, or even a guy like Denver Jones was the primary ball handler. So I think matchups, I think, is going to be the biggest thing for him. You don't want to put him in a matchup where he's guarding a 6'6", shooting guard who's just going to bully him down in the inside. But you want to get him out and running and then spotting up on the 3-point line. Give the kid confidence. That's what he needs. That's got to give it to him. And then my orange and blue glasses answer is you said you were sold a dream by Coach Bruce Pearl. Sounds like you were just sold a dream by Coach Nate Oates as well, son. Because you're not starting. Sears comes back or not, Phylon's way better than you. Not even close. So you would have been benched here at Auburn if Phylon was coming as well. Because Pettiford's coming as well. So, yeah, loser.
Well,
Dang.
choice words for Ian Holloway there. Some fighting words, Gray. You can back those up. All right, let's move on to the NFL draft here. I was, as mentioned, when we started the show, it happened this past weekend. Had some pretty interesting decisions by a few teams in the draft, in the first round especially. You had six QBs taken in the first round, ties 1983 for the most quarterbacks taken in the first round. And that draft included John Elway, Jim Kelly, and Dan Marino. And the other three guys ended up not having great NFL careers. They don't really, not really notable to mention them. Majority people probably wouldn't know who they were. And then in day two, no quarterbacks were taken. And then in day three, Spencer Rattler ended up getting taken by Nathan's New Orleans Saints. That was the longest space between selections between quarterbacks in NFL history, 138 picks between Bo Nix and the Spencer Rattler. And crazy enough, 15 offensive players were selected before the first defensive player, which blew past that previous record of eight in another draft. So there was a high priority on offensive players this draft, is whether you disagree with it or not, whether you think somebody like Atlanta Falcons should have drafted Michael Penix eighth overall instead of getting somebody to help their defense, which could not generate pressure last season. Well, let's start with that pick there, the Falcons pick, guys. Drafting Michael Penix eighth overall when they already signed Kirk Cousins to a massive contract this offseason. What were the Falcons thinking, guys?
They were sniffing zebras and seeing colors. I have no idea what they were. I just don't understand. You have a position of need at an edge rusher or linebacker. You're at number eight, one of the best players in the draft, by far the best edge rusher and linebacker in the draft, falls to your lap because people are quarterback hungry. First three picks are quarterback hungry. Dallas Turner falls right into you, and you pick the fourth quarterback when you just signed Kirk Cousins to $200 million, $100 million guaranteed. And you don't even just pick a young quarterback like
JJ McCarthy.
a McCarthy. You pick the oldest and most injury-prone quarterback in the draft. Blows my mind. Look, I love Michael Penix and what he was able to do at Washington this past year, especially off the injuries he had while he was at Indiana. I think he's a great kid. I think he's a great player, a stud of a quarterback. I didn't think he was a pro quarterback, even when he was tearing it up at Washington this past year. I don't understand this at all.
Yeah, I got some for y'all. This is what Diana Rossini tweeted about during the draft. She said, "Why would Atlanta use their eighth pick to draft a quarterback? The team believes they won't have a top pick with Cousins under center the next few years, and now is the time to get a great one." So basically, they're gonna sit Michael Penix behind Kirk Cousins, and by the time
He's
they
going to be
can.
29 by the time Kirk Cousins is done with his contract.
So realistically, Kirk Cousins' contract is a 2-year deal because after 2025, there's only $10 million in guaranteed money. So they can cut him, and then they'll have $10 million to pay him. But still, by that point, Michael Penix is going to be 26, 27 years old. And people were like, okay, this is like what Green Bay did with Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers. Well, Jordan Love was not 24 going into his rookie year. He wasn't getting Social Security going into his rookie year. And this has nothing to do with Michael Penix. Like you pointed out, Gray, he's a great player. I think if he would have gone to somebody like the Raiders or a quarterback needy team, I would have had a problem with him going in the first round. But the Falcons don't need Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, I know he's coming off an Achilles injury. Maybe there was worries of, hey, he can't. We're worried he's not going to be able to be what he once was. But then why would you go get him? Why not get another quarterback? And maybe this pick makes more sense. There were so many more needs for this team if you wanted to contend. In NFC South, that is very weak. With Kirk Cousins as a quarterback, this team could easily make the playoffs. And the defense, with Raheem Morris at the head coach, and he's bringing his defensive staff in. If you get Dallas Turner or a Latu or a Byron Murphy, that beefs up the defensive line that has been weak for years. I don't understand.
I want it to be known that I was 6 of 6 on my picks all the way up until that point. I had mocked Dallas Turner to get to the Falcons because apparently I'm smarter
That makes
than the Atlanta
sense.
Falcons general manager.
Talk
So,
about Terry Fontenot or whatever his name is.
The guy who's not gonna have a job next season
Yeah.
is what I like to say. So I was flabbergasted that I had to sit there and think about why they would do this after going and getting Kirk Cousins on a 4-year deal, paying $180 million. I guess they just want to throw money at the wall. I guess that's what they want to do. And then for the fact that they got Michael Penix Jr. out of the bunch of quarterbacks that were on the board, a guy who's older, a guy who has dealt with a lot of injuries. Like, and I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. Like Gray said, he did phenomenal things at Washington, but there are a lot of problems that he's had over the years that if you're going to bank that on the number eight or seven, eight pick in the draft, then, I mean, you still had guys like Bo Nix on the board. I think Bo Nix is a better quarterback than Michael Penix Jr. is. I think
He's so
he
old,
has,
though.
yeah. I mean, they're both old, but if I looked at what Bo Nix did as a pure passer at Oregon last season, and I compared it to Michael Penix season, Michael Penix gets beat up more than anyone because of the amount of times he decides to scramble out of the pocket, and he's already dealt with a bunch of injuries. So how long could he last in the NFL if he decided to keep that same scramble technique? With a guy like Bo Nix, I know he's going to stay in the pocket. He can scramble at times, but he's more likely to stay in the pocket and make better throws and make better reads. His development at Oregon was a lot better than his development at Auburn. That's just he felt fit better there. And I felt like Bo Nix went to a good place with the Broncos, and then they went and got his teammate Troy Franklin. So they set that team up way better than what the Falcons did. I don't really understand what direction the Falcons are going in. Especially when their defense has not been intimidating at all over the past few years. You look through their NFC South games, they just get ran over. There is no stopping anyone. I mean, they look make the Saints look like they're the best offense ever last year. I mean, Derek Carr is a very bad quarterback, very bad, and they made him look good. And then you decide to not go and improve your defense in the offseason. So Falcons fans, I'm sorry. I mean, what a terrible franchise.
So you draft Michael Penix, and the reason behind it is you don't think you're going to have a top pick in the next couple of years. Maybe trade back, because I don't think anybody was going to draft Michael Penix this high. Maybe trade back
No.
and you accumulate a first round pick next year from somebody that's quarterback needy, like a Raiders team. Maybe you go, hey, Raiders, you give us 13 and give us your first round pick next year. And maybe the Raiders suck next year, and maybe you're able to get a Jalen Milroe, a Shedeur Sanders, a Carson Beck. I think the quarterback at that point, after Williams, Daniels, and May were gone, I think you have better options next year than you do drafting Michael Penix, McCarthy, or Bo Nix. So I don't understand the rush to go get Michael Penix Jr., especially when he's 24 years old, or he's about to turn 24.
Okay, so we talked about their first round pick. Do we want to move on to their second round pick?
Talking
Does
about
that
Ruka Ro-ro-ro-ro-ro-ro-ro, Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo? Yeah. With all the defensive players on the board, that's the direction that where they
Over
went.
Johnny Noon. Over Johnny Noon.
I don't get it. I do not get it, man. They are something else.
And as much as I love Jace McClellan, they draft him as well with the 35 running backs they already have on the roster. It's just like they
I
didn't
don't
address the
know.
quarterback. They
It's
didn't address the
not like they
quarterback
took
at all.
a running back in the first round last year who they decided to not play over a guy like Tyler Allgeier most of the season. Gosh, Arthur Smith. Oh man, Falcons are so messed up.
Let's move on to their NFC South counterparts here, guys, starting Nathan with your Saints. After
Yeah.
you've had time to stew on it, I know you weren't initially happy with that first draft pick, but seeing their draft as a whole, what were your thoughts on it?
Like we filled a knee in the first round. It wasn't what I wanted. Especially with a guy like Dallas Turner still on the board. Dallas Turner is just one of those prospects where you go, he's one of the best edge rushers you've seen in a while, and he has this intensity to him. So you're like, let's go ahead and scoop him up. Or you look at the secondary and you want to improve that with a guy like Terrion Arnold. I looked at that, but we went safe and we went with an offensive tackle. Felice Wonga out of Oregon State, he's not bad. I think the main question is how mobile can he be? How good can his footwork be to keep playing the tackle position? Because if he can't move, then he's going to likely be switching to guard. And it's not a bad thing. It's just I don't know if I would have taken them there. I looked at this offensive tackle class before the draft, and you had a guy like Joe Alt, who is there is Joe Alt. There's a huge gap. And then was J.C. Latham, and then I think there's another big gap, and then you have Fuanga, in my opinion. Honestly, a guy like J.C. Latham probably would have fit better here, but I had the same concerns for him. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Probably more.
It's I'm gonna be optimistic about this pick and hope that he doesn't have an injury problem like every single one of our offensive
Everyone
linemen
else.
does.
Well,
So I'm gonna be
Trevor Penny's got
optimistic.
an attitude problem. That's a different story.
One thing at a time, Alex. One thing at a time. And then we move on to the second round. And this pick I loved. We traded up and were able to get Kool-Aid. I think that's probably one of my favorite picks. Kool-Aid, we've been through this time and time again. He was a first round talent. And the only reason
Top
he fell
10.
back, I think he won the best cornerbacks
Bombers.
available. And he just fell back because of what Herrion Arnold was able to do last season at Alabama. He was not in the spotlight anymore. But a guy who's a very physical press cornerback, I know he's not as fast, but he can go and be physical when you need him to be. And I think that's another huge need filled. Look, it's a very young defensive background. There's definitely some veteran pieces, but it's more young now. So it Kool-Aid's one of those guys I'm not gonna be worried about. I think this is probably the biggest one that y'all are waiting on me to talk about is Spencer Rattler going in the fifth.
QB1, starting
I
quarterback.
watched Spencer Rattler at South Carolina do some amazing things. I think I go back to the game he played against Tennessee, what, 2022. I was amazed with what he was able to do. And then I watched him the rest of the time at South Carolina. And I was like, what is he doing? What he plays cornerback? I didn't understand. Look, we got him in the fifth round. I'm not gonna sit here and just dwell on it. It's not like we went and said, hey, let's use a second on him. Let's use a first on him. We're not the Atlanta Falcons. But do I believe Spencer Rattler has a future with the New Orleans Saints? I'm not gonna say he does right now. And that's just because I think the Saints are too loyal to Derek Carr. For some reason, I don't
Dennis
know
Allen
what
is.
Dennis Allen is definitely. And as much as I love Spencer Rattler, he has so many issues in his decision making. Like, he has the potential to be a good quarterback, but his time at South Carolina, he messed up so many times. He was very turnover prone, he forced a lot of throws, and then in the pocket, he would just step up for no reason sometimes and get himself sacked. So it's one of those things where he needs to have a better pocket presence. He needs to learn how to read the defense a little bit better. And going into the NFL, I think he can develop that way, but I'm not going to rely on him to be go into that season, go be quarterback one. I'm not going to say he needs to go ahead and take Derek Carr's job as soon as the season starts. Because as far as like Derek Carr goes, even though he's very, very bad, he has experience.
And since Rattler's offense, his offensive line could not defend apart, like could not block Bart Carr. It was that bad at South Carolina. And to Spencer Rattler's credit, I don't think he ever criticized them publicly or anything like that. So maybe he has a future with the Saints, Nathan. For your sake, I hope he turns it to be a good quarterback. Because since Drew Brees retired, you've been going through a carousel, just like me and Gray have
No,
with
you don't have to
the
remind
Carolina
me.
Panthers.
You don't have to remind me. I know. I know it every season.
Right, talking about the Carolina Panthers here. They initially did not have a first round pick, but ended up trading with the Bills at number 32 to go up and draft Xavier Leggett. They get some guys like Jonathan Brooks, Trevon Wallace, and Jadeveon Sanders. What are your thoughts on what the Panthers did this draft?
It wasn't bad. I think it could have been better for sure. I would have made some different decisions probably. It sounded like, all, draft season, all combine season and everything, it sounded like the Panthers had fallen in love with Xavier Leggett and him being so close and him really wanting to be a Carolina Panther and him, coming and giving another weapon for Bryce Young, which was needed. I think that was needed, going out and getting wide receiver, but we really said, oh, let's go get more weapons for Bryce Young. We went out and got Texas running back Jonathan Brooks, was the first running back taken on the 46th pick. I actually think he would have been an even higher pick if he didn't get hurt this past season. I think he was the best running back available in the draft. I just don't know if that assesses a immediate need, but I know that getting Trevor Wallace in the third round, that does assess an immediate need. Need that replacement for Frankie Louvu. Need getting Jatavion Sanders in the fourth round. I think that's great value. Getting a guy to put alongside Tommy Trimble. You saw flashes from Trimble this past season when he finally had a quarterback that knew how to, kind of get it to him. I think getting flashes for, and then getting Chael Smith-Wade in the fifth round is an unbelievable value pick, and a need, especially with J.C. Horn's inability to stay walking, I guess. I
Don't
really
get me started on
wanted to
J.C.
assess
Horn.
that corner need earlier, especially as a top five talent, I think, in the entire draft. And Kool-Aid McKinstry was just sliding and sliding and sliding and sliding and sliding. I really wanted them to go out and get Kool-Aid, but credit to the Saints for doing that. But overall, I think it's a good draft. And these are not guys that are going to come in and change the whole deal for Carolina, but these are guys that come in and help Bryce, and see if we can turn this thing around slowly but surely.
Yeah, I was pretty back and forth on the Xavier Leggett pick. He does not have a lot of route running ability with him. He's more of a slant and go, vertical route go. But with when you have guys like Adam Thielen and Deontay Johnson, who are more of the polished route runners in the league, you can have Xavier Leggett learn from those guys and in the first year just go, hey, Xavier Leggett, run me a streak route real quick. And he has the acceleration and the catch radius to go up and get the balls from Bryce Young. So I think Leggett, he's not going to come in and be the guy you're telling to run all these specified routes and stuff like that, but he has the intangibles you look for in a receiver who can develop and go, all right, just go out there and give me a touchdown. Go get open. And he can do those things. And working under a guy like Dave Canales at the head coach position, who worked with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett in Seattle, then worked with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin last year. He has experience working with good receivers. I'm not saying Leggett's going to turn into DK Metcalf. That's who he's compared to, but if he can get anything close to that
Deal.
for Bryce Young, please, please, please give him a weapon.
Sign me up.
Yeah, and I think Jonathan Brooks, I think a little bit of a reach considering we have Miles Sanders under contract, under that awful contract we gave him last season, and you have Hubbard, but Jonathan Brooks, I think, is going to be more of a dominant back for Carolina, especially if he can be healthy going into the season. I think he'll solidify himself as the running back one. I don't think Sanders really has the role as that. Neither does Hubbard. I think Hubbard's better in a committee system. He proved that when he was behind some other guys in Carolina. Trevon Wallace, I was kind of questioning about that pick as well, just because Peyton Wilson was on the board. But then I realized, hey, Peyton Wilson doesn't have an ACL in one of his knees. And I look at Trevon Wallace's tape, and he plays with a bunch of energy. I think there was a highlight where he played with so much energy and ended up breaking a guy's leg. And that's something to laugh about, but to play it with that much energy, I mean, if he's not going to be a starter year one, I don't think he will, because Carolina has Shaq Thompson and Josie Jewell at the linebacker position. But he'll be a special teams guy. He can come in and play with high energy, especially if Thompson goes down with an injury again like he did last year. And he's been kind of injury prone these past couple of years. I think Wallace gives us good depth and a good young guy to develop. Sanders, Tommy Trimble, as much as I love him, has not taken, it's not developed. Ian Thomas, not as well. Him, tight end position since Greg Olsen.
We had Greg
And
Olsen.
thinking about Jatavion Sanders and what he did at Texas, especially watching him against Alabama, if he can play like that with Bryce Young, I'm excited for that one. And
Deal.
then Chael Wade-Smith, he was a defensive player of the game at the Senior Bowl, and to get him that late in the draft to come in and address that cornerback need, which as of right now we had Troy Hill and J.C. Horn, and I think DeCaprio Boodle's like quarterback three or something like that. It's not good, so I would not be surprised if Smith Wade is starting day one.
I did want to ask both of y'all, because the second round pick for Jonathan Brooks, at the running back position. I felt like it was a little bit of a reach considering the running back class being what it is this season. But a guy like Trey Benson still being on the board. You look at Brooks coming off an ACL injury. What makes you want Brooks more than a guy like Trey Benson, who had a really good season at Florida State?
I think the receiving threat from Brooks is the difference between him and Benson and every other running back, down that list, because this wasn't a good running back class at all, especially with Brooks coming off his injury, his knee injury. But I think he showed a lot more of being a flexible back and a guy that you can pair along Hubbard. Because just like Alex said, Hubbard was much better when it was more of a running back by committee than when he was a running back number one. And we didn't see what we wanted to see from Miles Sanders last year.
Will we
And
ever?
literally. I think him being more of a receiving threat than Benson is the pull to him. But I would have been fine with either of those two guys if we had to pick a running back on that spot. I would have been fine with Benson and it would have been all for it, but I see the pull to Jonathan Brooks.
I think with Benson, there was a lot of games last year where he was just completely rendered ineffective. There was games where I would look and he had like 12 rushes for 8 yards. And Jonathan Brooks was much more dominant. And you can say, well, Jonathan Brooks had a much better offensive line. That's true. Florida State's offensive line wasn't great. But Jonathan Brooks, I know he had the injury last season and in his season, but he has a lot less mileage than a guy like Trey Benson. Because last year was Jonathan Brooks' first year starting, because he was behind Bijan Robinson for his entire career. Trey Benson, on the other hand, he started the last 2 years at Florida State. So I think getting a guy like Jonathan Brooks, I know he has that injury, but like Gary pointed out, the receiving threat, the less mileage on his legs, and just his overall ability to have a burst more than Trey Benson does, I think makes him more valuable than Benson did in the second round. Much as I disagree with getting a running back that early.
Same.
Just real quickly, guys, who do you think had the best draft? Who do you think had the worst?
The worst, it's got to be the Falcons. I just
Part of the worst.
you can't. Oh my gosh, it's one of the worst we've seen in a while, just because of who they picked and where they picked them, and who they picked them over, and the needs that they just did not address when they easily could have. I don't see how this makes the Falcon this draft class makes the Falcons any better for next season. I don't see a player on that. On their draft board that I think comes out and starts or comes out and is a true threat and makes them a better football team than they were the year before. Oh my gosh, that's just terrible. As far as the best, there are a lot of really good deep draft classes in this draft. A lot of teams got really good value from where they picked. I would say the Saints getting Kool-Aid in the second round is huge value. I would say the Vikings, I know I don't really like the JJ McCarthy pick. I don't think he's a pro quarterback in my personal opinion, but getting Dallas Turner where they got him, that's huge value. I would throw them on the wall. I think Detroit getting Terrion Arnold at pick number 24, I think that's huge value as well. Then you got to think about the Chiefs as well, getting Xavier Worthy at 28. That's crazy.
Thank you, Bills.
Thank you, Bills. No kidding. And then there are a lot of draft classes that just consisted of, 10, 15 players that they're just loading up, like the Packers and the Texans, who had a deep draft class as well, and the Colts and those teams. I think for the best, I'm gonna go with, really don't know. I think it's one of those teams that got really good value.
Pull a name out of a hat.
I'm going with the Bears. I'm not going to go with that. I'm going to go with the Bears and who they got in the top 10. I don't really like what they did in rounds 2 through or in picks 11 through 256. But getting what they did, their offense is going to be fun to watch next year with Williams and Rome Odunze. I think the Odunze pick at 9 is as good a value as you can get because of how deep the wide receiver class was. I think any other class outside of this one and 2021, this Rome Odunze is the top wide receiver, and he's who the Cardinals pick at 4. But then with Marvin Harrison being in this draft, Malik Nabers and all those guys, I think getting Rome Odunze at 9 and Caleb Williams having the top draft pick. Thank you. You're welcome, Bears. I'm good with them.
Nathan.
Well, I'm going to go a little bit different here. The Falcons always didn't have a great draft. I think I'm just going to go and say they did have the worst draft, but I'm not going to go ahead and sit here and make this all basic. I really didn't like the 49ers draft. I didn't like the reach on Ricky Pearsall in the first round.
And
I
that's
didn't.
terrible.
I didn't really
Terrible.
understand it either. It wasn't addressing this unbelievably huge need. You already had a lot of talent at the wide receiver position. I didn't understand why going out with a first round pick and getting a guy in Ricky Pearsall. And then they addressed another need in a cornerback in the second round. Why didn't you take a cornerback in the first round when a guy like Kool-Aid was still on the board? Kool-Aid would have fit that defense really, really well.
Cooper
And
DeJean
then
as well.
and then there were still be a bunch of wide receivers still on the board for you. I just didn't understand the whole pick, and it felt very out of place. I think Ricky Pearsall is very athletic, and but he's a very raw talent. And to go and use a first round really just surprised me. And the rest of their draft, I felt like they kind of took a lot of projects, which they definitely can moving forward. It's not like they're bad or anything. But a lot of the picks just didn't make sense to me, or they felt like reaches. And then for the best, I really liked the Chargers draft. I liked how they were able to get a huge need and get an offensive tackle in Joe Ault, who I think will play a lot, a long time in the league. I think it will be really, really good. I like the addition of Ladd McConkey from Georgia. Ladd McConkey is not a very fast guy. He's not very physical, but he gets the job done. He's a reliable receiver. And then I like the fact that they got a guy in Justin Boybie on the defensive line, kind of improving their depth there because they definitely struggled there in the defensive end last year. And then getting two cornerbacks and back-to-back picks and Taheem Still out of Maryland. I thought he did a fantastic job there. And then the guy in Cam Hart out of Notre Dame. And then I think that really pushed it over the top was being able to get a guy in Brennan Rice out of USC in the 7th round. I didn't think anyone could have figured that he would have fallen that far. But I think he's a very raw prospect as well. But the difference is they waited to take him. And he's going to be a project, but I think he can turn out to be a really valuable wide receiver on that roster that definitely needs some wide receivers to step up.
Yeah, I think the worst draft for me has to go. I know we're all going to say the Falcons, but I think the worst one has to be the Miami Dolphins. First round pick being Chop Robinson. I know everybody's like, he's got a lot of potential, a lot of potential, but he did not have a lot of production at Penn State. I believe he didn't have double digit sacks in his time there. And I look at what was else on the board that the Dolphins needed: corner help. Right now, Jalen Ramsey, Cam Smith, and Kater Kohu are the main corners on that roster. That's not going to cut it. And you have guys like Terron Arnold on the board, Quinyon Mitchell, Kool-Aid, Cooper DeJean. I mean, Nate Wiggins. They either pick of whoever they wanted to draft at corner. I don't think Chop Robinson was necessarily a need. I know Phillips and Chubb are both coming off Phillips off an Achilles and Chubb off an ACL. But you have those guys, if they're health come back healthy, you don't really need Chop Robinson. You need corners. That's the immediate need. So I think that getting Chop Robinson at 21 was a reach. Patrick Paul at offensive tackle in the second round. Not a huge fan of Patrick Paul. I think if you're going to, they would have addressed offensive tackle, it needed to be earlier in the draft, needed to trade up. I think there was a lot they could, at that point, they could have addressed corner if they didn't want to address it in the first round. It felt like he's not going to be a great piece there. He's more of a developmental player. And with guys like Terron Armstead not being able to stay on the field, you can't really afford to, hey, let's give Patrick Paul 2 years to develop when he might hit the field week two when Terron Armstead inevitably goes down with an injury and is out for the season. And then Jalen Wright, the running back from Tennessee, I don't understand how many more running backs Mike McDaniel needs. You have Etienne last year, Mostert. I don't know if Wilson's there anymore. I mean, I don't believe he is. I think his contract ran. No, he is. You got Jeff Wilson. So I don't understand why you need another running back. Once again, more needs on this roster. Could have gone offensive lineman. Could have gone defense. Defensive tackle. As of right now, I don't think they have any sign on the roster. So it's like, well, and they get two picks on receivers. You have Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. He Mike McDaniel's proven he can do more with less at the receiver position. So I don't understand those picks either. So the Miami Dolphins, it felt like they were just picking whoever they wanted to, and they were picking more developmental pieces. And at this point, they're not like the 49ers. I don't think they can wait for people to develop, especially with the plethora of needs they have, especially on defense. And the best drafts, I have to give it to the Chiefs. You trade up and you get Xavier Worthy. You trade with the Buffalo Bills, who you've been beating up on the past few years. So you get your speedy receiver. You steal him from the Bills. And Xavier Worthy and Marquise Brown, good luck, other teams guarding those guys. You're just going to have them just straight down the field. And I don't know how you're going to cover that. Then getting the offensive tackle from BYU, Kingsley
Pronounce his last
Tuia.
name. Yeah, there you go.
Suma, it's going to be a struggle. I think he's really a developmental piece. And I think the Chiefs can afford to develop him. They have invested in offensive linemen in the past. They have the depth to wait for him to come in into his own. And then Jared Wiley, the tight end from TCU, he is 6'7". And you already have a tight end in Travis Kelce. They just recently re-signed him. But having Jared Wiley, let's say, come in on goal line plays and Patrick Mahomes just says, okay, Jared Wiley, just run up and catch this ball with your 6'7" frame. Good luck. Once again, good luck NFL teams with Patrick Mahomes
No
at
chance.
quarterback and his elite level ball placement. And I think Jaden Hicks is also the DB from Washington State is also a pretty good pick. I think he was one of the better safeties in this draft class, and the Chiefs for the past couple of years have kind of been running a rotation at safety, so getting depth there is good once again for the Chiefs, and they can afford to get it. So I think the Chiefs really nailed on all their picks, and the thing that makes it bittersweet for them is you get Xavier Worthy by trading with the Buffalo Bills, so you've been beating up on for the past couple of years. And I think that was the craziest thing for the Buffalo Bills with it. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.